Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 234 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin, joined by my special guest this evening, Eric Robinson, at underscore Eric underscore Robinson of ESPN and formerly of the Falcoholic, of course. Eric, how we doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing good. You know, we were sort of holding out hope that maybe the Calais Campbell signing would occur like just before the show so we could just ride that wave of hype. But as of, you know, 8:03 p.m. on Wednesday night, it has not happened. So we'll see, you know.
I'm hoping the reason why is because he's enjoying a nice steak dinner somewhere in downtown Atlanta with Terry. And with Arthur, if Arthur's there, or whoever, if Rich is there somehow, so they're eating dinner right now. That's why I'm hoping that's the reason why he's not signed, because they're finishing up. Once they finish up dinner, they're going to go back to headquarters and get this thing done. And
it's very casual. It's really just a formality at this point. We're just in the wine and dine stage. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. That's definitely what's happening. But we can hope
that's,
at least.
That's all right now. Because everyone back at the office at headquarters is getting the contract and stuff, getting all that stuff tidied up and nice. So when he comes back to the facility, it's just simply, sign here.
Right. Yeah. Maybe they'll just do it in the morning, you know, let him get a good night's sleep at the Ritz-Carlton, you know, wherever.
Maybe. That might be the thing.
Maybe. But
with the contract to the door the next morning.
You know, nice limo pickup. Maybe service. Patterson can come get him in the spider or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely go pick him up. Bring him back to the.
You got to if you got Patterson out there recruiting, like I expect he's like chauffeuring guys around. But you know, we have no reporting on that. But I could just see him doing that.
I think he would do that with a big smile on his face. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, I think he would take to that like immediately. Like he should go into the front office after this because he knows how to get the attention of those free agents. But guys, we got a lot to cover. The Falcons have continued to be busy. We talked about like a lot of the main signings on last week's Falcoholic Live. They have continued to be busy bringing in probably more like fringe starter depth pieces since then. We did get some really interesting news with Eddie Goldman coming out of retirement. Obviously, we mentioned Calais Campbell potentially signing. Trey Flowers came in the other day, so we're going to spend the majority of the show covering the newer stuff since the last time we've come on. But since Eric wasn't on last week's show, I did want to give him a chance to sort of weigh in on some of the major signings, some of the main moves that the Falcons made earlier in the process, and sort of how you're feeling going into, I guess, this. It feels like it's been longer, but I guess the second week of free agency now.
Technically the second week, yeah. You know, this hold on a minute. I'm sorry. I saw Ian Rappaport come off my phone.
Careful. Careful.
Wait a minute. So, you know, I think the free agency has definitely been positive for the team. There's probably been a couple names that hasn't been signed that's, you know, been acquisitions elsewhere that I wish would have been Falcons by today. But overall, for the most part, I'm very pleased with the direction that the team is going right now. This is definitely a completely different roster, and it's a different outlook on the team compared to like 2 weeks ago. Because adding a Jesse Bates gives you a true free safety, a true center fielder, a guy on the back end that can definitely make plays. Adding David Onyemata to the interior defensive line alongside Grady Jarrett is the muscle that this team has needed for a long time. Like, Grady's been down there in the trenches by himself for the most part, and now he's got a tag team partner in Onyemata, who's may not necessarily be a household name for some, but if you watched enough Saints football, you know who he is and what he's capable of. And this guy has been a consistent force on the interior for the Saints for the last few years. You know, adding a guy like Caden Ellis, again, another guy that's not a household name, But if you throw on the tape from last year, he came on late in the year, had 11 starts on the season, had 7 sacks, and he did that as a stand-up linebacker. So just you think about what the Falcons just went through this past season when it came to trying to find some sacks. And essentially a guy that started off as a second stringer early in the year for the Saints ended up with more sacks than anybody else on the Falcons. So what does that say? The potential is there for this guy. I'm not saying he's going to be a future All-Pro, but the guy can, he knows how to get after the quarterback a little bit. And I think Ryan Nielsen is going to know where to put him and how to deploy him. But overall, you know, re-signing or extending Chris Lindstrom, well worth it. Arguably the best guard in the game right now. Honestly, you have a foundation on the offensive line. You lock that up. If you have an opportunity to lock that up, you do it, especially with a guy like Chris Lindstrom. Not too many Chris Lindstroms are walking around the NFL right now. Re-signing Caleb McGarry was interesting. Interesting because I actually like the figure that he was re-signed for.
Yeah, for sure. Roughly
12 and a half.
I think it was 11 and a half. Yeah.
11 and a half. I remember someone asked me when I did a space last week, someone asked me like, what would be the most that I would have given him per? And I said 12 and a half. So he was actually signed, $1 million cheaper than what I anticipated. I didn't want to go over 12. And they brought him back on a 3-year deal. This is a guy before free agency starts. You saw it yourself. This is a guy that potentially was probably going to get 15, 16 million per.
Yeah. That's 16 and a half was his Spotrac value, I think. So,
yeah. And the tag, if they would have tagged him, tag would have been 18, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you got him back on a 3-year deal for 11 and a half million. I'll take that.
Oh yeah.
To keep that continuity going on the right side of the line. If you watch plenty of film, if you watch plenty of football last year, you will understand where the most success in the run game came last year. It came off that right side with Lindstrom and McGarry. So they got them both back. I'm pleased with where the direction is going for this team right now. And even the signings are one thing, but even the visits that they've had. You know, getting a Calais Campbell to truly, even not signing him is one thing. I hope they do. But just the fact that this is the guy that's been obviously ring chasing over the last few years, and he was released from Baltimore. And this is, I may be wrong, and if I'm wrong, please correct me. This is the first notable visit that I've seen him take since he got released from the Ravens. That should tell you something as far as where a veteran like himself sees the team, where a veteran like that sees the roster, sees the coaching staff, sees the, you know, the atmosphere around the team. This is not necessarily viewed as the old Falcons anymore. This is viewed as a up and coming team, a team where a 15-year veteran is saying, hey, you know what? You guys are looking pretty interesting right now. I would definitely take a visit. So him and Trey Flowers, another guy, another big corner, big nickel corner that I think will fit the defense. He's also considering a visit. This is a guy that's coming over from winning a ton of games over in Cincinnati. And of course he, you know, was let go. And then of course he's right over here saying, hey, let me take a look at what Atlanta has going on right now. So I really like the direction that the team is going right now. I mean, this is a different team in my eyes compared to a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of energy, which is nice to see. And like, it's true. Like, I think that, I think guys are excited to play with Ryan Nielsen. I think there's a lot of buzz around the defense and guys being able to come in and be a part of like a resurgent team. And look, I mean, guys that are ring chasing, the Falcons would not be in my top 10 most likely teams to make the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, probably not even top 15, but like every year there's a worst to first team. The Falcons did technically finish fourth in the NFC South, even though they tied, you know, with the Saints, but I think because of tiebreakers, they were fourth. Every single year, I think there's two teams that go, you know, on average from worst to first. So the Falcons are probably the favorite for that, I would say, of any team. And they've dumped a lot of money into improving the roster. They've really shored up a lot of their weakest spots, and they've just added a lot of talent in general to the roster, which is helpful. And like, yeah, as Dr. Ganja, great name, by the way, in the chat says, like, you know, if you're not getting into like Philadelphia or San Francisco, like, where else do you go in the NFC? Because it's sort of wide open right now. And the NFC South is arguably the place to go, because any of these teams could do it. So whichever one of those teams you have conviction in, you know, 10 wins probably wins the division in the NFC South. So I don't think Atlanta's a bad thing. And it's like, my guess is that Calais Campbell's going to be 37. You can count the number of guys who've had impactful seasons at age 37, probably on one hand. Calais Campbell, I think, is an exception to that, because at age 36, he had, what, 5.5 sacks, like 30-something pressures. Yeah. You know, so it's like, yeah, at age 36. So, like, yeah.
Grady led the team with how many sacks?
I think he had 4.5. Maybe he had 5. I don't remember. Maybe it was more. Maybe it was 6. But it was, like, similar.
It's similar to what Calais Campbell did.
Yeah.
At 36.
Yeah, and Campbell, like, people don't realize this, but the Ravens played him out at 5-tech on base downs, and he was, like, one of the best run defenders in the NFL. So, like, even if he's just that, they don't really have that right now. And, like, Ogundeji, like, I'm still holding out, like, a small amount of hope, because, you know, he was a day 3 pick, and last year was just his second year. But, like, there's no doubt that, like, Campbell, even if he's just your base package 5-tech, like, your run defending specialist, he's by far the best run defender on the roster at this point, probably. So
even with that, you can just, I feel like he is definitely an added bonus just for his locker room presence.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, Grady's the quote-unquote old head in the room. I get it. But Pelaez has played a ton of games, been in the playoffs a number of times. You know, he's been in organizations. He's been in Baltimore, which is a structured organization. He's seen that. You know, he was part of, you know, those Cardinals runs in the mid 2000s. You know, having his voice, he's seen a lot of football. Having his voice in the locker, it's like having another coach on the field, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So even bringing him in on the field, like, yeah, 36-year-old with 5.5 sacks, and that is a solid run defender at worst, is one thing. That's a nice addition. But just his voice and his presence and his tone and his experience in the locker room is going to help. It's going to help Grady. It's going to help Taquan Graham. It's even going to help David Onyemata to an extent, honestly. Like, it's going to help everybody. Having his voice is going to help Arnold Ebiketie, D'Angelo Malone. Like, just you can't sleep on that. You can't discount that, man. That is a lot. Trust me. Having Freeney in the locker room back in 2016 probably helped Beasley a lot more than we thought it did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I getting him to me is – will be a nice, very nice addition. I don't care about the age.
No, I don't care either. And it's like, if I'm the Falcons, like, you throw extra money at a guy like Campbell to get him to come here, first of all. Like, my guess as to why he's looking at Atlanta is because the other offers haven't come. He's a 37-year-old defensive lineman. It's, you know, I think the contenders are like, well, we're just going to wait and see what happens in the draft, and, you know, maybe we'll call you afterwards. But maybe he doesn't want to wait, you know? And maybe the Falcons are like, and my guess is other teams are lowballing him, saying, like, we'll pay you $3-4 million, whatever. He was making $10 million last year. So, like, maybe the Falcons come in and say, you know, we'll give you $8 million. Come and play for us. I mean, that's a high price for his skill set right now, but I think he's well worth it. And he's probably only looking for 1-year deals at this point. Maybe you give him the second year in case he doesn't want to retire. You know, you could spread out a little bit of cap that way. But, I mean, I think he's coming to Atlanta because he's feeling like the Falcons want him to be here. Yes. And they're maybe the team that's actually pursuing him to an extent that makes him feel like, look, like, maybe I'm sure he wants a ring. But at this point, I'm sure being around the NFL this long, he knows that, like, the chances of getting a ring on any team are quite low, even the best teams. So,
yeah.
Maybe just go to a place where you can have a big impact, where you're going to be really valued, Yeah. Where you, and like, yeah. just see what happens because anything can happen. So, I hope they do get it done. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure Atlanta was not the only team that came calling, but I'm pretty sure whoever else came calling, like you said, offered much, much lower than what he was anticipating. Probably close to vet minimum, honestly. And I think even at 36, with what he can bring to the table, vet minimum was definitely a slap in the face, honestly. I think maybe $3 or $4 million is probably somewhat of a slap in the face as well. Like, again, you don't discount that type of presence, especially when you're trying to build a team and you're trying to build a culture. And those type of players are what you need in the locker room to help build a culture, a hard-nosed culture saying, hey, we're going to turn this thing around. We're going to play football our way, and we're going to win some games. You need that. You can use that type of voice in the locker room for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So that's the one we're really watching. Before we get to a couple of the other signings that have come in over the last week, let me remind folks, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're listening to the podcast audio, you probably noticed that the feed is under a different name. It's now called Dirty Birds and Brews. But other than that, the only major difference is that I own the feed 100% now. So that's cool.
Congratulations.
Yes. So that's nice. It should be showing up on all platforms. But if you do have an issue finding it on your particular platform, let me know. If it hasn't updated in a couple days, I'll have to resubmit the feed. So hopefully that won't happen. But, you know, be a little bit patient. But hopefully by Friday, Saturday, everything will be settled. And also, of course, since I own it, we're free to take any and all advertisers. So if you own an Atlanta area business, a craft brewery that wants to send us some brews and we'll talk about them on the show. Or just someone that wants to, you know, hit that, 18 to 35 male demographic that everybody knows and loves, you know, that's what we do here on the Falcoholic Live. And just, you know, if you're just a cool company that wants to get your name out there, just hit me up, falcoholiclive@gmail.com. And we can talk shop. All right, moving on to some more football talk. Next signing I wanted to get to was, a UCF legend, first of all, Mike Hughes, the cornerback. Drafted by the Vikings in the first round, had some issues with injuries, went to the Chiefs, had a great season, playing mostly outside, then went to the Lions where he played mostly inside in the slot. And a lot of people are wondering, is Hughes the Isaiah Oliver replacement? Is he just depth? The Falcons did say the Falcons liked him in the slot, but I'm curious what you think about the Hughes signing. Eric, do you think the expectation is that he's the starter at this point? I mean, we haven't seen numbers yet, so that might play a difference too. But
it wasn't a surprise that he got a 2-year deal. I'm mildly surprised about that.
He's like 26. Now, he's super young.
We'll wait and see whether or not that second year is more of a voided year, or if that second year is a pretty much guaranteed like year. But I think his addition is interesting because you will look at the size, you will look at the tape. Well, you will look at the size and you will automatically think he's a slot corner. But in actuality, his best football has been played on a boundary outside the numbers. But he's already been told, according to him, he's already been told that, you know, he's playing the slot. So it's interesting because and all this talk all this time was that in all likelihood they'll go the big nickel route where, you know, you got that big corner kind of sort of like Isaiah Oliver. Maybe seeing him walk away was definitely a mild surprise as well. Mm-hmm. But seeing Hughes sign is interesting, and seeing Hughes signed and being told that he's going to play primarily in the slot is also interesting as it is as well. I don't mind the deal at all. I think he's a solid signing. I think he's a solid addition. As you mentioned, he's still fairly young. So I don't mind his ability. He's definitely a underrated blitzer for sure. Yeah. Yeah. He's still got plenty of speed, and he can also be an added bonus on kickoffs. Now you have, you know, if you're Marcus Williams, now you have you have Cordero, you have Mike Hughes now, you have Avery Williams. Pick your choosing as far as who you want back there to return kicks, and you can just rotate with that. And that's a nice little added wrinkle back there as well. So we'll assess a lot more as we get a little bit more of the contractual details. But it's going to be interesting to see him playing in the slot. I got to be honest with you, because again, as I mentioned, his best football was played outside. So
yeah.
I don't know. Do you think you don't think his signing impacts them taking a swing at a corner early, right?
No, not at all. No, I wonder if he's like an upgrade over Mike Ford, like that he's like probably, like Mike Ford could play inside, outside, and he was a special teams ace. Mike Hughes is also a special teams ace, probably not as good of a gunner, but I, you know, you're probably not losing a ton there. But I think Hughes is a much better actual corner who also is an inside outside guy. So I wonder if Hughes is sort of your fourth or fifth corner now. On paper, maybe he does end up being your slot starter. Like, I'm sure he'll have an opportunity to win that job in camp. I think they're probably at this point planning for Hayward and Terrell to be the outside guys. And then, you know, there's D. Alford there as well. But I think they're just trying to build like a really versatile group of corners, like that there's a lot of flexibility with what they can do. You know, they visited with Trey Flowers too, who we can talk about. We talked about it before the show a little bit. He's big, almost like quasi safety. I think he even played safety in college. So, maybe they bring him in and just add another sort of versatile guy that they can, you know, maybe it's the slot is not necessarily one guy. It's like, depending on their opponent, they sort of mix it up. You know, because I think, sneak peek at my mock that's coming on Friday. I had the Falcons, Antonio Johnson, the safety from Texas A&M, he fell to third. So I had the Falcons taking him as their big nickel, you know, as sort of that type of player.
He played a lot of combo at A&M. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's okay. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because it's like I want to take a receiver. The receivers all went. I was like, all right, well, who's on the board? Antonio Johnson. I love Antonio Johnson. Perfect big nickel guy. It's what he did in college. So, but not really what's, I think, on most people's radars because of the Jesse Bates signing. But, like, I think they have a lot of flexibility with what they've brought in. I would like the Trey Flowers signing as well. I think they just sort of upgraded the baseline level of the secondary so much. Like, they really only have the two stars right now in Jesse Bates and AJ Terrell. I don't think it, like you were asking, I don't think it impacts the decision at eight at all. I think they should feel free to still take like Christian Gonzalez or Devon Witherspoon if he's there. I think they're like trying really hard not to box themselves into anything, like into any one pick at eight, which
makes,
I think
that's
basically,
sense to me.
Yeah, it's basically what they've done every year, but
right. I mean, BPA, that's going to be the approach. And that's an approach I don't mind whatsoever. Going to the draft, just, hey, we're going to take talent. Forget need. Yeah. We're just going to draft talent.
Bijan Robinson, baby. No, we'll get to that. Hey. We're going to get to that. We're going to have that, because last time that was like a 30-minute thing. So we're going to wait a little bit longer to talk Bijan. But we'll sneak it in, I promise, Eric. Don't worry. But yeah, right. It's going to happen. Let's don't worry. Yeah. We did get... Whew. So let's talk about probably the most unexpected news of the last few days. Eddie Goldman. I was hyped about Goldman signing. I can't remember if you were. You might have been. Were you?
I was
mildly intrigued.
I was mildly intrigued. Yes. Okay. I was. Yeah. I was mildly intrigued. Now I'll admit I'm not as much like, oh my God, they just added Eddie Goldman as some people are. I'm looking at it more so like, okay, which Eddie Goldman are we getting?
Right. It's a very odd situation. Now people should remember that Goldman's not very old, so his retirement was unexpected. I think he's only going to be 28 this year or 29. Yeah. So like, he's not Calais Campbell, who's like, how is this man still getting six sacks a year? He must be a literal god, which, you know, he is, Calais Campbell. But, you know, Eddie Goldman, you know, he took the year off for COVID. There were rumors that he was struggling with his health in 2021. You know, the Falcons signed him for 2022. He came into camp. He came in, I guess, to OTAs for a few weeks and then decided to retire. Now he's come back. So I do think it's interesting. Like, I would caution people not to get like super invested in it, but I think the fact that he's asked to be reinstated is at least worth talking about. And I think that I would assume that he's going to at least make it to camp this year, but you know, I don't know what to expect from him. I think it could go either way, right? It could be like, oh, this guy hasn't played football in years and he's not going to make the roster. Or it could be like, oh, he's healthy, he's invigorated, he's had some time off, you know, he's had a couple years to get his body and his mind back in the game, and now he's, you know, back to 2020 or 2019 Eddie Goldman, where he was lighting it up. So I think it could go a lot of different ways. It's sort of an interesting wild card at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, that's and that was my concern, where, again, asking or wondering which Eddie Goldman are we getting? Are we getting Eddie Goldman that, again, was him retiring last year a mental thing? And if so, is he in a good enough mental space right now? Or was it just, you know, him taking time to rest his body, which it could be, because when you're playing nose at his size, you know, your body gets beat up a little bit. So at the very least, you're getting a 28-year-old like him who's, you know, who had a year of rest. You know, his body is not as beat up. And you mentioned he took the year off for COVID as well. So you're talking about what, a guy that's been out of, you know, he's missed roughly 2 years worth of action over the last,
two of the last three. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not necessary, as long as he kept himself in good enough shape, which I'm sure he did in order for the Falcons to sign him last year. You know, you're getting a 28-year-old nose tackle that has two less years on his, you know, on his tires. So we'll see. I was just, it was a surprise for sure. Like, man, he came out of nowhere and said, I want to come back and I want to come back for you guys, which was, again, that was definitely a surprise. I'm just wanting to know, okay, which Eddie Goldman are we getting? Is he focused? Is he back? Is he locked in? Is he ready to play some football? Then of course, hell of a piece right there. Rotationally.
Yeah.
Onyemata, Goldman, Grady, Graham, man, please. Let's play some football.
I mean, I think he definitely makes, because it was funny, because the news that he was reinstated came out like literally minutes after I finished my mock, and I had the team taking Gerard Clark, the Coastal Carolina nose, in like the fourth round. And I was like, well, with Goldman coming back, probably not going to prioritize drafting a nose tackle anymore. They may still like add someone like a Robert Cooper as an undrafted free agent or with like the seventh rounder. But I think by the time the draft comes around, the Falcons will have either believe that Goldman's at least like got a decent chance of playing, or they'll he'll fail his physical and they'll waive him or whatever by that time. Like, we still don't know enough about that, but at this point I think Goldman's probably your nose tackle for 2023, and the question is more, how effective is he? Is he like average Eddie Goldman, or is he prime Eddie Goldman, whatever? But either one of those is probably better than Timmy Horn. No offense to Timmy Horn necessarily. Yeah. But Timmy Horn is probably a practice squad nose, who's your first guy off the, you know, the bench, not a starter. And that's not an insult. Like, do you have need for those players? I mean, if you're an NFL backup, you're probably still one of the top 0.5% of all football players in the world. So, you know, in context, but I don't think going into the season with Horn as your starter is really what they want. So I think having the presence of Goldman will probably make it less likely that they draft a nose tackle like high, which is good, because I think that frees up a pick. And Goldman's only like $1.2 million or something like that, which is very reasonable.
And I want to address, because there were some concerns yesterday after, you know, Goldman coming back, and then, you know, the headline of Calais Campbell visiting. A lot of people are wondering, does this affect the team possibly taking a Jalen Carter if Jalen Carter somehow slid to them at 8? I think this is an organization that is not foolish. If Jalen Carter fell to them at 8, I think they'll still take him. And I think they'll just say, hey, you know what? We'll figure things out later. Let's just grab him.
Yeah. My No, I mean, I mean, there was the Josh Kendall Athletic piece suggesting the Falcons wouldn't take Carter. And that's where they're at now. That could obviously change. I do believe that, you know, Kendall has connections because I've met Josh and I definitely respect his reporting, but, things could change by the time the draft rolls around. And part of me is like, it distills to this, right? If Carter, if his like off field is no big deal, which it could, like, I can't comment on it. I don't know. I don't know anything about Carter personally. And I won't pretend to. So if the NFL decides that it's no big deal, then he's going number 5 to the Seahawks. Like, I can't see the Seahawks passing on him if they're even like, I mean, the Seahawks are willing to take risks on basically anyone. So, like, I just don't see a world where the risks aren't that high and Seattle passes on Jalen Carter. So
Seattle or Detroit, I think one of those two teams will say, hey, you know what? We'll gladly bring him into our locker room. And we'll say, you know what? We just added a future all pro to our defensive line. There has been news that, you know, when it comes to him, like, there's maybe one or two teams in the top 10 that are considering him and everybody else is like, no, I'm not sure I'm buying that. I do believe that probably half the teams, from what I've heard, I believe probably half the teams in the top 10 are like, let's take him off the board. But which teams exactly, I'm not quite sure. But I don't know if I view this as, man, he is in serious jeopardy of falling out of the top 10. I can't see
that. I agree.
Even if he gets past Seattle or Detroit or even Atlanta, to be quite honest with you, I'm not even sure I see Philly saying no, because Fletcher Cox doesn't have a whole lot of time left. They lost Javon Hargrave this offseason. You mean to tell me you would not be enticed with a Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis pairing for the next 10 years if you're Philly?
Right. Yeah. No, I think they would absolutely take him if he fell too. So
I think they would absolutely take him, yeah.
Yeah. So I think if like the off-field stuff is no big deal, then he's going 5 or 6, no questions asked. If the off-field stuff is a big deal and both the Seahawks and Lions pass, then I could see him falling, because that to me signals that it's more serious perhaps than people realize. And again, we can't really comment on that because we don't have the connections. Yeah. We don't know Jalen Carter. Yeah. I don't want to cast any aspersions on him or whatever. We got to let the process play out. But, you know, I think it's like, if it's no big deal, he's not going to make it to Atlanta. If it is a big deal, he'll make it to Atlanta, but they're probably not going to take him because he's probably going to fall quite a bit. Because if there's any team that like literally does not care and will take big chances on players, it is the Seattle Seahawks. They've done it time and time again. Sometimes it works out for them, sometimes it doesn't. But considering the talent of Jalen Carter, like, I just cannot see them passing if he's there at 5.
And I just can't see Dan Campbell passing on possibility having Aiden Hutchinson and Jalen Carter on his defensive line.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's just too enticing.
Yeah.
Even if I was GM, I'll say, hey, look, man, look, we got him all the way up here in Detroit. We're building a locker room here. Let's make a consideration, guys. Opportunities don't come around.
They don't. Yeah. So I think it's like one of those two things. Like, if he's on the board for Atlanta at 8, I don't think they're going to take him because probably something more serious is going on. But more than likely he's not going to be on the board. I think we're in like the news cycle where his stock is the lowest. And by the time the draft comes around, he'll be right back to being top 6 in mocks. Like,
he'll be right back. Yeah.
That's just how it goes sometimes. So,
that whole nine thing weird. He'll lose that by draft time. I'm not worried.
People have talked about it. I kind of agree with the thought that's like, look, he just wants to get out there back on the football field and get away from all these distractions. And like, I don't blame him. I mean, his agents probably tried to stop him, but like, I mean, let's be fair. Like, nobody was like going into Jalen Carter's pro day as like, okay, this is where we're going to make or break our eval on Jalen Carter. Like, that was literally like, that's going to be like 5% of your eval. So you either have a top 5 grade on him or not, and him being a little overweight at his pro day, probably not going to move the needle for you significantly. It's more the off-field and potential legal issues, but it sounds like he's going to avoid any potential jail time. So that obviously is a big consideration. And it's really just like, the teams will have to do their vetting
they will have to make their decisions, and we're not going to be privy to any of that information. So we'll just have to sit back and see what happens. But let's move on to the next signing, which came in just minutes before the show. Jermaine Ifedi, swing tackle, comes back. A guy that some people thought could challenge Caleb McGarry. I was one of those people. Caleb McGarry won that battle quite early in training camp, so props to McGarry Island and all of his supporters. But Ifedi, we didn't actually get to see it all for good reason, obviously. He only ended up having to play 8 snaps, but the re-signing does... It's funny, but he's like only a year older than Caleb McGarry. I feel like he's been in the NFL forever. That always blows my mind. Yeah, but he was like a super young rookie, and Caleb McGarry, of course, was like an older rookie, so that's the difference. But the Falcons do bring back Ifedi. Now they do have that veteran, I think pretty good swing tackle, honestly. Like, this is a guy who has been a average starter for much of his career. So having that as your swing tackle, I think, is pretty good. And that, of course, nullifies another one of my mock draft picks, but I'm not changing it again. So, you know, I drafted a swing tackle in the 4th round instead of Gerard Clark. And now, of course, they re-signed Ifedi. So, you know, Warren McClendon.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but he can play guard too, right? So it's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not changing it again. I'm not changing it again. But yeah, what do you think about Ifedi coming back? Does that make you feel better about the offensive line as like a whole?
I wonder if this is a move because of the fact that they lost Edoga.
Maybe.
Because Edoga was really solid last year for a reserve lineman who came in. It looked like he was going to be the natural swing tackle, but he saw some time at left guard later in the season after Wilkinson and Hennessy were hurt. And even during his little bit of time at left guard, he looked surprisingly well, to be honest with you. So I thought he would have been one of those reserve linemen that the team would consider bringing him back, but they didn't. And he's off to, I believe, Dallas, right?
I think Edoga went to Dallas. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so just, you know, having Ifedi back again, another veteran tackle, swing tackle, you have him in the locker room, was solid overall. And again, you can't have too many of those. I think it definitely helps out the depth. And we'll just kind of sort of have to wait and see what they do at left guard this offseason, man. Cause there's no starter there, Kevin.
Right. I mean, right now it's Matt Hennessy, right? Who they did seem insistent on getting into the starting lineup, throughout, like, and like, to be fair, wasn't awful, but, you know, I would like a little bit more insurance there. So, you know, but I do wonder if they will bring back Wilkinson. Like, if they may have like, it seems like what they're doing is they have offers out to many of their free agents, like their guys that they could re-sign that are probably pretty minimal. And they're like, look, we would like to have you back. Here's what we're willing to give you. Feel free to go out and see if you get a better offer. We won't be offended. Do what you got to do. And Mike Ford, to his credit, you know, Isaiah Oliver, they did that. But some of these guys might be like, okay, I'm not getting any better offers. I'm coming back, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah, I definitely think that happened to Caleb, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
That offer at $11.5 million per was probably on the table early, and they said, hey, you know, you want to test the waters? Go ahead, do your thing. Yeah. And he went out there, he tested the waters, and, yeah, those waters were not deep. So he came
They were
on
not back. As deep as expected. I mean, that was surprising to pretty much everyone. So,
yeah.
I mean, like – I prefer Jawan Taylor, but like Jawan Taylor at 20 versus Caleb McGarry at 11.5. Caleb McGarry's half the price of Jawan Taylor. It's like, at that point, I'd rather have McGarry, you know?
honestly, I'm not much of a Jawan Taylor fan because his biggest weakness is the team's strength.
Right. I feel like they might be able to coach him up, you know, because the Falcons literally coached up every single offensive lineman on the roster to be a good run blocker last year. But... Okay. You're not wrong. Like, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. So, but yeah, I mean, at that price, I'm not interested. Like, I was like, oh, maybe you get Jawan Taylor at 17 per. I'd rather have him at 17 than McGarry at 17.
Jawan Taylor to make $20 million a year.
No.
I didn't like whatsoever. That was a surprise.
That was a surprise. Whew. So, you know, good for him getting that money, though. Good for him.
Good for him. Get your money, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're still waiting on Elijah Wilkinson. I do think the Falcons probably do have an offer out to him.
I imagine, and this is a good natural seg. Were there any other signings that you wanted to touch on? I think we hit all the major ones at this point.
I think we hit pretty much everything. Oh, well, I mean, Mac Hollins.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the literally the picture on the episode that we haven't talked about, for God's sake. Okay, thank you, Eric. Jesus. Wow. Yeah, okay. Yes, Mac Hollins, please. Let's talk about Mac Hollins.
It's probably the one signing where I'm like, okay, I guess.
I like maybe. It's interesting, right? Because, like, I think now that we've had an offseason where it's like they've had the money, so now let's see where they prioritize spending. And I think we can see that they do prioritize tight end, right? They're willing to pay Jonnu Smith a lot to be their tight end too. They prioritize the offensive line. What's that?
Love the Jonnu.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess you didn't talk about that too. We can get to that in a second as well. But it seems like wide receiver, they're really trying to be cheap. Like, they're gonna have to pay Drake London eventually, but that's a long way away still. And, like, they haven't really been involved. I mean, reportedly they were in on Darius Slayton. He chose to go back to the Giants. But, like, to me, it's like maybe wide receiver is the position that they're going to sort of try to maybe fill it with, like, a bunch of wide receiver three types and not really spend a lot on wide receiver two, because the third and fourth options in the passing game, like, the wide receiver two in this offense might be like the third or fourth option in the passing game. Whereas in a lot of NFL offenses, it would be the number two option. So
unless his name is DeAndre Hopkins.
Well, yeah, that we'll talk about that too. Let's give Mac his shine here before we get off on the DeAndre Hopkins rabbit hole. But,
that's serious things a little.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely talk about that rumor as well. I do think that Hollins makes a ton of sense for the Falcons as an outside starter because he's an elite run blocker at wide receiver. I think he was like the fourth or fifth best run blocking wide receiver according to PFF last year. He did just have his best ever season at age 29. So he hasn't gotten a ton of reps. So it's like he's not your average 30-year-old receiver who's just been getting beat up every year. He played a lot of special teams, but he's hitting his stride. Big physical guy, does give the Falcons another option. And by all reports, just kind of universally like loved by his teammates. I mean, multiple time team captain, big time special teamer. So like, I do wonder, like, I think that if the Falcons had to have him as their wide receiver too, they're probably satisfied. I think they would like to get another guy in here. Like, to me, I think they're waiting on the Corey Davis situation to sort out. And we'll see. Yep. Maybe he gets traded. But if he doesn't get traded, he's getting released. So
part of me feels, honestly, Kevin, that this move was them not wanting to wait on Corey Davis. Because who knows how long that situation is going
Well,
to be.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
That situation is dragging out longer than I thought it should. And a lot of it is because of Aaron Rodgers. And we don't have to talk about Aaron Rodgers on the show, but he's a thorn in my side, honestly. Just whatever. But I figured this move was more, you know, it dictated more like, okay, the team's just not ready to wait that thing out. Because the rumor is that, you know, Davis could be part of the trade package for Aaron Rodgers. So
right. The
team is kind of sort of like, okay, well, is he going to be cut? Is he going to be traded? They don't know. We don't know how long this thing is going to be carried out. This thing could definitely go on for the next few weeks or whatever. And I think they just don't want to wait. So they just went ahead and got Mac.
And he wasn't expensive. I mean, like 1 year, $2.5 million. Right. I mean, right. It's not much. Yeah.
Now I'll admit, you know, this is with their passing game, with their arsenal that they have at their disposal now, they're definitely putting together a basketball team for sure. You know, you got Kyle, who's 6'6", you got Drake, who's 6'4", Mac is 6'4", Jonnu's 6'3". Cordero's 6'2", but Cordero's a thick receiver that, you know, is definitely plays like a receiver that's 6'4", 230 or whatever.
Yeah.
you know, you just, there definitely, there's a blueprint there with that. Now, I do think at some point this offseason, they do add a shifty receiver in some, capacity.
Sure. They're going to, yeah.
They're going to, yeah. But at the very least, their passing game, or how you defend their passing game, you're going to have to be physical, and they want you to be physical. And the one thing about Mac is interesting because of the fact he's 6'4". He looks the part as a receiver.
Yeah. He looks like a tight end.
He looks like a tight end, but he can actually stretch the field.
Yeah. He ran like a 4.53 or something. I mean, that's really good for that size.
Really good for a guy his size. Yeah. And Philly, when he was drafted, Philly used him in that manner as a deep threat. And when he was in Miami, you know, they dialed up a few deep shots. Even though they had Jalen Waddle out there, they dialed up a few deep shots to Mac Hollins as well. You have a collection of pass catchers that all, I don't want to say specialize in one thing, but one thing they all do very well, they all catch through contact.
Yeah,
every last one of them. Pitts, Drake, John, they all can catch through contact, which is, I guess, an underrated aspect in this league.
Yeah.
Some receivers can't. They get flustered when they have coverage on top of them, and they can't concentrate. They can't make catches, but these guys can't. So it's going to be interesting to see how it's deployed. But I will admit, the Mac Hollins signing was like, I was like, okay, all right, cool, I guess.
That's fair. Sure. I mean, I think that's fair. Like, I wouldn't expect, like, crazy
things. I would have rather waited till the draft. I would have rather just say, hey, you know what? Let's get a Cedric Tillman out of Tennessee, and let's build with that.
Yeah, see, like, I guess I feel like it's just sort of their thing, right? Like, it's the same thing as, like, Mike Hughes or Jermaine Ifedi or all these things. It's like, they're like, basically Fontenot's like, we need to make sure we're going into the draft with like enough everywhere that if we don't get what we're looking for, that we're still okay. Like we can, you know, like say the Falcons, like in my latest mock, the third round, all the wide receivers were gone. Like they all went early. So it was like, oh, well, that's not great. We're going to have to take somebody later. With Mac Hollins here, it's not really a crisis. Like you can sort of take a fourth round or a fifth round receiver, mix them in, and then maybe you see who shakes loose, you know, over the next few months in camp. You know, if it gets really desperate, you can make a trade during the season or before the season starts. But you're like with Mac Hollins in the fold, your receiving group is not like disastrous like it was before he signed, where it was just like Drake London and a bunch of, you know, UDFA types. So I don't really think it changes anything. Like, I think they could still draft Cedric Tillman. I think they could still take a wide receiver in the second or third round if they wanted to. I think maybe it leans it slightly more to that, like, third, fourth range than it would have otherwise been. But
I will say this, though. When this receiving and tight end group is getting, you know, getting off the bus or whatever and walking into the arena, you are saying, oh, damn, okay.
You better not have a small corner out there.
These guys are big.
Yeah.
The smallest one is Cordero, who's 6'2", 235. You're like, oh damn.
Okay. This ain't gonna be fun. And they're gonna go. Every single one of them is gonna block you into oblivion too on the run plays. They're just gonna pancake you.
Your 5'9" and 5'10" corners are in trouble. They are in trouble.
I do think that style, like, I think they tried to do that last year too, but it's just Mariota doesn't throw contested catches. He just didn't like to do it. So I do think that this style of receiver is more likely to jive with, like, you know, Desmond Ridder, whose number one receiver was Alec Pierce, who is basically doing that all the time. Yeah.
And he threw jump balls to Alec Pierce all the time.
Yeah.
Because he trusted his guy to go up and get it.
Yeah. Which is perfect for this receiving core. Literally perfect for Kyle Pitts. So I'm wondering if that will just make everything work smoother from there. But I don't think it really takes them out of the running for a wide receiver, like, early in the draft, like third. I think it's probably like third, fourth round is what they're hoping for. You know, like Jaden Reed, Cedric Tillman, you mentioned, Tyler Scott. You know, Andre Yosefus maybe a little bit later if they're looking for that size speed guy. They have a lot of options. So
Trey Tucker, maybe.
Yeah, Trey Tucker too. Yep. So, you know, we'll see how the hell that goes, right? But the Hopkins trade rumors, I really don't think the Falcons are seriously interested. He's just way too expensive. The Falcons, I think, value their day two picks too highly. Now, I guess if it was like the fifth and sixth that is rumored that it might be the compensation, then it's like, okay, well, I'll have the conversation at least. But I don't know. I just don't really see them doing it. But what do you think about those rumors?
I think they've, at the very least, I think they've inquired.
Yeah, certainly.
I think they've picked up the phone and called and said, okay, we'll keep that in our back pocket for now. I think they've assessed the whole situation, the whole landscape, and they see for themselves like, hey, you know, DeAndre's a name, but to be quite honest with you, not many teams are budging on DeAndre right now. So it may be a situation where they're like, okay, we'll wait this out, and we'll wait this out to see if the Cardinals come down off that price. And if they do, we'll reassess it again. But I think at the very least, they picked up the phone, they called and say, okay, you guys want a second in that? All right, we'll get back to you. It's one of those conversations. We'll get back to you. And they're just kind of sort of looking from afar to wait this thing out. If it does get to a point, because I have seen where, you know, DeAndre has a $19 million base salary this upcoming season. I have seen where the Cardinals are probably going to pay half of that, which for a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, I don't mind. I don't mind bringing
it's 10
in
million. Yeah, sure.
If it's 10 million, yes. Yeah, if it's 10 million and all they want is a fourth and a fifth, yes.
Yeah, you're not getting anything better than that with a fourth or fifth round pick. That's for sure.
No, you're not. This is DeAndre Hopkins. I know he's up in age. What, he's 30? That ain't that old, but whatever.
I mean, yeah. If the price gets to that point, there are going to be a lot of suitors. So,
a lot of suitors. And the funny thing is, you can, and I think at this point of the whole trade talk, they were smart to say, okay, we see the asking price. We're not necessarily 100% behind it. We're going to sit back and watch. By them doing that, Dallas took themselves out of the market by trading for Brandon Cooks. So now they're like, okay, one of the bigger suitors is practically off the board at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So now they're like, all right, well, we see Dallas. Dallas was probably going to be the one team, because Dallas was reportedly the one team that DeAndre wanted to play for. And now they have Brandon Cooks, and it looks like they could have had DeAndre Hopkins instead, but they didn't wait. So I think it was, in that aspect, if that was the strategy, they were smart, because it took one of the top suitors off the board for them.
Yeah. So no, I think so too. So we'll see how that develops. I mean, if the price does come down to like a fourth and they're willing to eat the salary, I think pretty much every team is going to be interested at that point. The Falcons, of course, are one of the teams that does have the flexibility to take on more of that salary. So maybe the Falcons are saying, we'll give you a fifth, but we'll take on more of the salary, you know, and the Falcons have the flexibility to do that. Some teams might not have. Maybe that gets it done. I don't think they're really that invested in it. I think that, like Eric said, they're wisely sort of monitoring it, but I'm not really expecting that one, honestly.
Well, let me ask you this. What's your selling point to DeAndre? You're Terry Fontenot. What's your selling point to DeAndre?
I mean, for Atlanta, I don't really know that there's a great one, right? It's like, well, you know, you get to, I mean, I guess he's would technically be the wide receiver one here, but you know, I don't know. I don't think the Falcons really could do much to sell it to him, but does he have a no trade, or is that, I don't think he has a no trade clause. So really they don't have to sell it to him at all.
I'm saying even if you want to make it look enticing at the very least for him.
Right.
I would sit here and say, hey, look, I got a young quarterback. Okay. I'm trying to supply as much talent around him as I can. And I know you're willing, or you're probably wanting to go off to Kansas City or Buffalo or whatever. And that's fine. Yeah. But I'm looking at you and I'm saying, DeAndre, I know where you want to go. You want to go far in the playoffs, okay? You can go to the AFC, all right? But as you can tell from before, it's a Royal Rumble over there.
Okay? It's dirty. It's dirty over there.
There's Kansas City. There's Buffalo. There's Cincinnati. There's Jacksonville, potentially. There's the Chargers, potentially. There's the Dolphins. There's a lot of teams you got to go through. You stay right here in the AFC, and you help. You're on the field with Kyle Pitts. Have you ever had a tight end teammate like that, like Kyle Pitts?
Kyle Pitts, drink you haven't, under, right? Man. Come on down. Yeah.
So you have – you ever had a receiver – you ever had a receiver teammate like Drake London that's 6'4", 230, that can make you – you never had anything like that before? Okay, cool. So
you ever had a real offensive coordinator? No.
You had a real I exactly. I'm painting this picture for you in this way, DeAndre. You can go over to the AFC. It's cool, and you'll be on a contending team. Man, you gotta. There's a lot of fights you gotta go on over there. Or you can stay here in the NFC. You can build with this potentially very skilled offense right here, and you can have an easier path to that Super Bowl that you want. Right here in the NFC. Does this NFC South division right here, as you can tell, is winnable?
Oh yeah.
Big it's time. Very much so winnable. It is. Which one would you rather have?
DeAndre? I mean, right.
Would you rather have the easier path? Where we'll pay you, because guess what? Kansas City might not pay you as much as we could.
Right.
Buffalo might not pay you as much as we could. So you can get your money and you can have an easier path to the Super Bowl. Right here in Atlanta, DeAndre. What'd you think? Like that would be myself.
I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, it could be a deciding factor. Really, the Falcons having the money that the Chiefs and the Bills don't exactly have. They don't have as much flexibility. That could be a turning point in getting a deal done if the Falcons, because the Falcons might be willing, like for the Cards, I think it's they want draft compensation, but they also want the cap relief because they're trying to rebuild. So the Falcons could potentially say, like, okay, we can pay him 12, so you don't have to take on as much. But we'll only send you a fifth. But maybe that $4 million of extra space or whatever is important to the Cards, worth the pick. You know, we'll see what it does. But if the money is a sticking point, then the Falcons are probably the team that's best positioned to make that deal get done. So
not to mention DeAndre, you're back down south. Okay, you don't have to go to Buffalo and play in snow, you know, cold weather. You know, you're from South Carolina, right next door.
Yep.
You can go to Kansas City. Don't get me wrong. You can go to Kansas City. You can go to Buffalo. It gets pretty cold there in November and December in both of those spots. Not so much here in Georgia. Yep. You know, it's just saying. Just something, another nugget to drop.
Just saying is all. Yeah. Just saying. Yeah. All right, last thing we're going to cover, we've been teasing it all night. We did have a donation about it, too, from Brandon Brass with the $3 saying, Derrick Henry only ran a 4.54. Bijan Robinson ran a 4.46. Team Bijan rise up. So, Eric, this is my segue to say, let's talk. We've talked a lot about how these moves have set them up. Do you think that with them sort of addressing a lot of their needs, especially in the defensive interior, solidifying offensive tackle, adding even the secondary help, does this make it more or less likely that it is Bijan Robinson coming at 8?
More.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. Yeah.
This is, look. For someone who has been on this Bijan Robinson train, this agenda for a very long time now, going back to last season, I'm seeing it.
Yeah, okay? I see the vision. I see
the vision as well, man. Look, I told everybody going back prior to free agency, I said, look, I'm not going to be on the Bijan Robinson train unless they do a number of things in free agency, which so far they have. They've added a playmaking free safety. They've added great interior help on the defensive line. They haven't addressed edge, but I think in all likelihood, they're probably going to wait until the draft to do that. They haven't checked off the CB2 spot right as of now. However, that is something else that they can address early in the draft, because cornerback class is arguably the deepest class in the draft.
Yep, super deep.
So again, when it comes to this Bijan thing, man, like, look, everybody sees the name, they see the position, they see the draft placement, and they're like, oh my God, let's not take a running back in the top 10. Bijan Robinson is a top 10 talent overall.
Regardless. He's top three. Top three talent.
Nope. Hey, you got him ranked higher than me. I got him top 10. You got him top three. I don't care what anybody said. Nobody's convincing me otherwise about that. You take positions off all these names and all these players. Bijan Robinson is a top 10 talent in this draft. He is the Kyle Pitts of this draft, in my opinion. He's the Kyle Pitts of this draft. Kyle Pitts coming out that particular year, you could have made an argument that Kyle Pitts was the best player in the draft that year. Yeah. Bijan Robinson is right there. And I remember you mentioned it the other day in the Discord chat that, you know, Bijan is talented enough to be a slot receiver in the NFL if he truly wanted to.
Yeah.
That's how good he is. That's how talented he is. This is a team that runs the ball at 55% of the clip. They were third in the NFL last year at run rate percentage. They mainly did it with Tyler Algier. Great pick. All right. You got him in the fifth. He ran for 1,000 yards as a rookie. Cool. But for those who are sitting here saying, we got Tyler Algier, we're fine at running back, that is one of the most foolish things to ever say. Because that's how you run your running back into the ground. That's how Ezekiel Elliott only has 7 years in the NFL, because he started off in Dallas. He didn't have a Tony Pollard behind him, so they gave him the ball 350 times a game.
Yeah.
With Bijan, with Algier, 15 to 18 carries per game, you can still run the ball 30 times a game. You're preserving both of their shelf lives. Both of them are staying fresh. You can still run the ball at a great rate. And not only that, but you can even toss in a wrinkle, Kevin.
Yeah.
You can let
they play defenses, pistol a lot. Yeah.
You can let defenses tackle them for three quarters. And you know what you can do? Cordarrelle. It's your
Earl
time.
Earl Patterson in the red zone, fresh legs every time.
In fourth quarter. Man, please.
And it makes you so much, like, people need to realize too, everyone who plays fantasy knows that running back is the most volatile injury position. And it's right. It's the same exact thing in real football. It is the position that tends to get injured the most. Now, a lot of times it's not season-ending injuries, but you need to be able to have, especially for a team like the Falcons that are going to lean on the run as much or more than any other team, you have to have another guy. And it doesn't have to be Bijan, but it has to be somebody. So the people that are saying, like, it would be a different story if Caleb Huntley was healthy, I think. But Not necessarily for the taking, like, for Bijan. Bijan's sort of his own thing. Like, if you want to take any elite talent at running back, then it's Bijan. This is more like the overall they need to add another running back discussion. Like, I think if Huntley was healthy, the need to add, like, at least a day three running back to sort of make sure you have somebody else in the rotation probably is diminished. But we don't even know if he's going to play this year. Like, he could be Cam Akers and be ready for training camp, or he could be Deontay Foreman and need a whole year or more to recover. So you've got, I mean, no, he's not even in that conversation. It's more like he could be the Algier, you know, RB2 or whatever. But, like, Bijan just takes your running game to a whole other planet of, like, number one in the NFL level.
Yes. Best running back in the league.
Even if they don't take Bijan, I guess what I'm trying to say is they have to add somebody else, because right now, unless you're thinking that Avery Williams is going to take a lot of carries, or like BJ Baylor is going to be a guy or something like that, like, they don't have an RB. Like, they have Patterson and Algier, but Patterson's not really a guy that should be taking a lot of carries anymore. And, like, Algier was a tank, but if he's hurt, then all of a sudden it's Patterson and Avery Williams. So they need at least one more guy. If it's not Bijan, fine, but, like, it is a need. They do need to add at least one more running back. So,
but I think the individuals who are saying this are individuals who don't watch tape. The individuals who are sitting here frowning at Bijan and say they don't need a running back, what can Bijan do? You don't watch tape. Just say you don't watch tape, because if you watch tape, you will understand how elite Bijan Robinson is. Texas offenses, you knew coming into that game what the game plan was. And yet he still put up historical numbers.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to be the entire offense either.
He doesn't. That's
now, props to Roschon Johnson, who did well also. But
yeah. Right. He doesn't. You don't. And you draft him eighth overall. Okay, cool. But see, at the same time, you have that luxury of doing so because you have so much on your roster already checked out. There's only so many edge rushers you can draft, guys. You can't, like, come on now.
Three guys at least already settled.
Hypothetically, they go out and get Yannick Ngakoue, and you're still like, oh, my God, let's draft Tyree Wilson. Come on, guys. Like, this is – come on now.
They got Carter, they got Ebikadi, and they got D'Angelo Malone, who was a third-round pick, don't forget. So, like, I think they like those guys a lot more than people think. Now, I think they still need to add somebody there, but, like, there's not room for them to add, like, two or three more edge guys. Like, if they signed Yannick, they're probably not drafting an edge. Like – because there's like at that point it's like D'Angelo Malone's your fourth edge rusher. You're like, are you really drafting another edge guy to be, you know, ahead of Ebikadi? Like, I mean,
not to mention, Kevin, you don't necessarily have to build a defense with just first round picks. I don't know why people are so fixated on saving first round picks for the defense. You don't have to do that. Like, it's not you. Look at the Saints.
Yeah.
Look at the first round picks they've used on edge. And where are they right now? And who were the better performers on edge for them in the last few years? Cam Jordan and a bunch of, you know, veteran signings.
Yep.
Like, you don't have to build a defense off just first-round picks, man. Like, it doesn't – you don't have to sit here and, you know, save those. But I'm just – again, for those who are knocking Bijan, they haven't watched tape. They don't understand what capability he can bring to an offense. This is a guy that can take – he can take a carry 80 yards, man.
Yeah.
80 yards to the crib. He honestly, from day one, he could potentially be the best weapon on Atlanta. I'm talking about better than Pitts already. Day one. Like, he has that type of potential, man. Like, he would do so much. And then again, if you're building around Ridder, the best way to do it is to supply him with as much top level blue chip talent as you can. And if he doesn't work out, you know what you have. But give him an opportunity. That will only help him to have that type of run game behind him.
Yeah.
That will make life a little bit easier.
Yeah. A little bit, you know. No, I mean, I think objectively speaking, no other pick would improve the offense more in 2023 than Bijan Robinson. Like, no other pick probably moves the needle as much as he would. And, like, I think it does, to some extent, bolster your receiving group as a whole, too. Because, like we said, like, this is a guy that is going to catch passes, like, out of the backfield. Like, you're going to use him as a receiver. You have to. So, he does fill that role as well. Like, don't look at it as just a running back that's going to take carries. Like, the Falcons use pistol a lot. Like, they did a lot of pistol, and it was kind of cool, but, like, pistol now with like Bijan and Algier, it's like, man, that's dirty. Like, what do you do?
How do you defend? You coming out of the
22?
You break the huddle. You break the huddle. You're in pistol formation. All right. He's flanked by Algier and by Bijan. Right. You got Pitts. You got Drake. You got Janu. They're lined up in a stack position, right? And all of a sudden, you motion Bijan out. How do you defend that?
Yeah. Bijan's just going to be one-on-one with somebody over there.
or even a pistol situation with two backs in the backfield. What is your game plan going into a game against Atlanta with Bijan in the equation? What is your game plan? Your game plan is to stop the run? Cool. Fine. Go to stack the box. Leave plenty of one-on-ones for Pitts. Plenty of one-on-ones for Drake. Plenty of one-on-ones for Janu. You're going to get out of that. You're going to go back to zone coverage. You're going to play a ton of cover two or maybe even some cover three. Cool. Run lanes everywhere. Everywhere. Yeah. Pick a run lane, guys.
I mean, and the Falcons didn't even need run lanes. They were like, oh, you're going to stack the box against us? They faced, I think, the most stacked boxes of any team. And they still were like the third best run game. So
didn't even need them.
Yep. Oh, that's okay. We'll make our own. We'll make our own run lanes. Yeah, so, I mean, it makes a lot of sense for the Falcons. Yeah, it does.
Come on, man. I'm telling you, if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm going up against Atlanta, and they got Bijan. I'm sitting the night before. I'm like,
yeah, what?
How would?
I think what we said in the Discord, it was like, Tyler Algiers will frustrate the hell out of you. Bijan will make you piss your pants.
Yes. Yes.
Like, yes. You're just going to be, like, angry with Tyler Algier. Yes. Like, this guy just keeps breaking tackles and getting extra yards. This yes. is really frustrating me. Bijan, it's yes. like, he slips that first tackle, and you're like, oh, my God, is this a touchdown? Like, yes. oh, God.
And Cordarrelle is making you curse to the skies coming in the yeah. fourth quarter. You're like, oh, my God.
Just Cordarrelle Patterson's just red zone. Like, just literally, as soon as they get inside the 10, it's just Cordarrelle, like, fresh Patterson. He just, like,
or even just, you saw how they use him against Seattle.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
said, close the game for us. And what did he do? Gave Seattle fits.
Yep. So, that's what the Falcons want to do. Like, you may not agree with it, folks, and that's fine. Like, you can have different team-building philosophies, but I think the Falcons are trying to zig when the rest of the NFL is zagging. Everyone else is going 11. Everyone's going, let's get as many receivers as we can. You even got, like, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, like, doing, you know, 4 or 5 wide receiver sets out there. Just like, let's get yep. as light and fast as we can. And that's fine. That's what college offenses are doing too. So there's nothing wrong with that. But I think the defenses in the NFL have started to adjust to that as the primary style. And the Falcons have decidedly gone away from that. They use the slot receiver only about 25% of the time. They use 2 tight ends, 2 running backs, you know, 2 plus tight ends, honestly, at the highest rate of anyone in the league. They use multiple running backs at a very high rate. They're not a traditional offense. Whether that makes them a good offense or not, it's still up for debate, but it's not that's why people keep asking me about Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It's not about him being talented enough for the pick. It's the Falcons just don't use a slot like that. Like, they're not going to draft Jaxon Smith-Njigba because they don't use a slot receiver. Like, the slot receiver is like an afterthought. They use a tight end there most of the time. So,
and the thing is, yes, this may look like more so of an old school offense, but the caveat to that is in their passing game, they're giving you these athletic options because it's not often you have a 6'6", 240 tight end that can flex out wide to X receiver on certain downs. That's the wrinkle there. It's not like your traditional run oriented offense where, you know, the receivers are slow and they're not as versatile. They're going to run the football, but in the passing game, they're going to make you think a lot because Pitts can line up here. He can line up here. He can line up here. He can line up over there. Janu can line up in the backfield. Janu can line up in the slot. Drake can line up in the slot. Drake can line up over here. So at least you're going to get a good dose of the run game, but the passing game is going to make you think, like, holy hell, where are these guys going to line up before snap?
Right. Exactly. So that's what the Arthur Smith offense is. We've seen it before. It's run heavy, lots of tight ends, lots of multiple running backs, going to force you to play base package defense, and then they're going to try to throw the ball over your head when you come into the box. And
yep.
they couldn't do it last year because of Marcus Mariota. That man could not throw deep. And that took away half of what the Falcons wanted to do on offense. The explosive plays were just not there in the passing game. They were there in the run game, and that helped cover up a lot of deficiencies, but the run game, I think, is going to be elite again. And I think they're going to go out of their way to make sure that the offensive line is set. And that's probably, like, if they hold on to some of this money going into the draft and they don't get the offensive line reinforcements, I think we may see them make trades, you know, sign guys that are out there, sign guys that get cut. They're going to make sure the offensive line is where it needs to be. And they're going to lean on that run game. But the hope is that Ridder is going to be able to at least connect on some of those deep shots. It's always a 50-50 proposition at best when you throw deep. Like, those are not high percentage plays, but you got to at least hit on 50% of them, or like at least 25 or 30%. Like, if like one of those 3 deep shots that they were throwing a game with Mariota connects, that could be 7 points. I mean, those guys were open. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the video on Twitter of Pitts and all the touchdowns that were missed.
We're talking about probably an extra 2 or 3 wins, to be honest with you. They were able to connect some of those deep passes.
Just a few. It's just, that was not Mariota's game. He did other things well, and then, of course, he fell off. But Ridder, I think, showed a willingness to throw that ball more. He didn't have time to get on the same page with all the starters by the time the 4 games were up, but he did hit a few of them, and I think his style of play lends itself a lot more to that.
Go ahead.
It's the trust. It's the trust that he showed. Like, he trusted Drake to say, hey, you know what? I'm gonna throw it to you, dude. I know you're gonna come down with it. It's the trust. In some occasions, Mariota may not have trusted the fact that either the ball is gonna get there or that he was gonna connect with Kyle or anybody taking a deep shot. It's the trust. Like, receivers, they appreciate that. They appreciate the fact that, hey, I may be covered one-on-one downfield, but the fact that you're still throwing it and you're still putting it in the spot for me to catch it, I'm gonna go get this thing. Like, yeah. I feel Ritter is going to build that type of rapport with Kyle Pitts as well. Like, yo, dude, I know you're 6'6". I know you're 245. I know all I got to do is put it in your vicinity and you're going to go get it. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And I think that they will. And I think that will unlock a lot in this offense. One of Ritter's best traits in college was his ability to find the one-on-ones pre-snap and hit them. I think that he'll be able to do that at the NFL level too. So, you know, we'll see how that develops. But we did get one last question here from Mad Tom K with the $3. Thank you, man. Appreciate that. It says, I agree that Bijan is elite. If we don't go that route, what about Roschon Johnson later in the draft? Obviously not as fast or as good as a receiver, but his college stats were very good, very similar in yards per carry to Bijan, and he is also sure-handed. And yeah, like, I think if they do pass on Bijan, a guy like Roschon Johnson, Tyjae Spears, I know someone in the chat was mentioning, you know, like, I think an early day three runner could also make a lot of sense. You just see sort of who falls from that group. I mean, I think that obviously does factor in too. It's sort of a different conversation because that guy is definitely going to be the second fiddle to Tyler Algier, which is fine. It's just,
it also shows that some people have not paid attention to how they drafted the last 2 years. Going into 2021, we thought it was either going to be what, a quarterback or a defender, and who was it? A tight end.
Yeah, I've definitely learned my lesson.
Right, last year we thought it was going to be an edge rusher, and what was it? A receiver.
Yeah,
dude, they're going to draft who they want to draft.
They do not care about positional value at all.
They don't care.
Like, that's why. Nope. Like, it could be Bijan. It could be Skoronski if they want to play him at guard. Like, that would not shock me. You know, I mean, I'd probably rather have Paris Johnson just because he can probably play tackle too. But, you know,
it could be Nolan Smith.
Yeah, there has been buzz around that, like, legitimate, like somebody random on Twitter today. Like, maybe that person knows what they're talking about. Maybe they don't. But I have also heard that there is some buzz around the Nolan Smith at anything like that might be legit. So.
Heard the same. Yeah, there's some interest there. Now,
which would be weird, but not. I don't know. I'm not 100%. I'm not opposed necessarily. It's a little odd.
To me, it would be because I don't see Nolan as a top 15 talent, top 20, top 25. Maybe he's probably going to go in the first. It's just a matter of where. Yeah. But taking him at 8, would it be a reach? For me, it would be a partial reach, but I can understand why they go that route.
Yeah, I mean, I would think they would want him to be Micah Parsons, essentially. Like, they would want him to play some off-ball, some edge, blitz a lot, play coverage. Yeah. Like, so I would think that's what they're envisioning if they take him that high.
Right. So, I mean, but again, going back to your point, positional value is thrown out the window. Drafting for need is thrown out the window when it comes to this team. Yeah. And you haven't, if you're sitting here saying edge, and that's the only way that they're going to go, that's the only way they're going to draft. And I'm like, dude, you haven't watched anything that they've done the last 2 years in a draft.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I honestly think edge is like the least likely at this point of all the positions. I don't want
to say least likely, but it's not a foregone conclusion, because it was a foregone conclusion last year.
Right.
It was a clear, like, yo, they need something.
Yeah. This year,
and
I think
we didn't got a receiver.
Yeah, that was that. Yeah, I should have known because the buzz kept building on that and I just ignored it. But for me, I think it's like Christian Gonzalez is probably the most likely right now to be pick 8. That's my thought. Bijan for me is probably number 2. And then. Mm-hmm. Number 3, I guess maybe is Nolan Smith, or an offensive lineman. Yeah. I think Tyree's going to be gone by the time we get to 8.
Where?
Apparently, the what was it? The Cardinals want to take him at 3, which is wild. But I do think that, like, I'm not saying it's smart. It's the It is the Cardinals, Eric. So, but I mean, Detroit. You know, I mean, Seattle, Detroit. It could also be, you know, I mean, Raiders too. They're just total wild cards. So.
It's funny because both Tyree and Jalen just seem like Seahawks picks.
They do, yeah.
Like that's another organization. They draft whatever strategy it is. They go against the grain for a lot of their draft picks, and it just seems like Tyree Wilson and Jalen Ford, to a fault, fits that Seattle mold. Like that's just who they are, man. So I keep seeing Seattle for one of those two.
Yeah, no, I think so too. So, but it's like, if Wilson falls, I'm into it for sure. Yeah.
I mean, I would be, and please don't get us wrong, because I know there's somebody that's watching this, or somebody that will watch this, is going to hear this and say, "Oh my God, we're pounding the table for Bijan at 8." We're not pounding the table for Bijan at 8. What we're saying is, it's a lot more. It's a huge opportunity for one.
Yeah.
And it's very much so realistic than what people think.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's on the table. Yep. It's on the table.
I learned my lesson last year when I was like, they're not taking a wide receiver at 8. That's ridiculous. And then they took a wide receiver at 8. I'm done. Yep. I'm like, okay.
I thought the same thing. I said probably Jermaine Johnson is probably going to be the pick. No, they went Drake London. Huh?
Yep. So at least they took the one I was like, if they're going to take one, I hope it's Drake London. So at least they got that. But
really?
Yeah. Yeah. I was big Drake. I had him wide receiver 1. I was a big Drake London fan. He definitely fit what I thought they were looking for the best. And that ended up being true also. So we'll see. I mean, you couldn't really go wrong with any of those first 3 receivers, honestly. So they're all pretty damn good. We covered a lot of ground tonight. I'm sure we'll have Eric back on. In short order to cover even more, but appreciate everyone for hanging out with us tonight. Please do like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. If you're on the new podcast, well, the new old podcast feed is just a new name. It's the same feed. Leave us that 5-star review. Really appreciate that, guys. Follow the show at Falcoholic Live. Support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/Falcoholic Live. You can get some exclusive Discord perks, access to some exclusive Q&As with us, which the next one, by the way, for those still with us here at the end of the show, going to be next Monday at 6 p.m., I believe. So stay tuned for that. And, of course, early access ad-free versions of the podcasts. So check that out as well. And we really appreciate it, guys. You can join the Discord also at the link down there. It's in the show description, too. So check that out. Also with us tonight, I want to thank my guest, Eric Robinson, @_Eric_Robinson. Eric, anything you'd like to plug before we sign off?
Plug in Falcoholic as usual, man. That's where you need to be for anything pre-draft, free agency looks. Like I said, last time I was here, man, I'm sure Kevin is out here just churning out, putting together great draft content as always with his scouting reports, with his mock drafts, man. Falcoholic.com. That's where you need to be.
Yep, absolutely, guys. Lots of terrific written stuff there every single day coming your way. So definitely check that out. And of course, you guys can follow me @FalcoholicKevin. Make sure to go follow the podcast, Dirty Birds and Brews, on all your favorite platforms. Like, subscribe on YouTube, all those good things. The mock draft episode will be coming out on the podcast feed and on the video side as well on Friday morning, so look forward to that. And we'll have lots more draft and free agency content. Hopefully the Calais Campbell signing comes soon and I can make a special episode about that, but you know,
I'm checking, man.
I've been refreshing all night also, but
refreshing the whole entire episode.
Literally, man, we're going to sign off and it's going to happen. I know this is going to happen. Yeah. So I'll allow it just because I'll be happy. But yeah, guys, thanks so much for hanging out with us tonight. Really appreciate all 200 plus of you that are showing up for an off-season show. Shout out to you guys, by the way. That's awesome. And we'll talk to you next time. All right. Have a great night, folks.